Welcome to the FTN NBA Podcast with your hosts, Adam Pfeiffer and Joe Metz. Presented by the FTN Network, this two-man fast break runs you through the best cash and tournament options for every game on today's slate.
Happy Sunday, everybody. Welcome back. FTN Fantasy NBA Podcast, presented, of course, by the FTN Network. Adam Pfeiffer, Joe Metz not with me this weekend. He'll be back on Monday, but happy to have been joined, or to be joined, I should say, by Mr. Kyle Murray, who does, I don't know, everything for us over at FTN Daily. I mean, articles, projections, live streams. I mean, anytime I see one of the social media handles tweet something out, Kyle Murray's Twitter handle is probably on it. Kyle, what's up, man? Thanks for joining me. And we got a pretty interesting slate because we have, what, 7-8 games? And all of them feature at least one team that's on the second end of a back-to-back.
Yeah, it's a pretty interesting Sunday slate. You know, Sundays at this time of year, they are good football days, but always can make time for a good NBA slate. So, yeah, we have 9 games, and every team or every game is featured with a team with on a back-to-back. So could be a little bit of a headache. I feel like Sundays are always a little bit of a headache in multiple sports, like baseball and now basketball with rest days and all that good stuff. But hey, that's kind of what we like in NBA, right? That's what we sign up for. That's why we play it. So good day for some NBA.
Yeah. So like the podcast is normally going to be Monday through Friday, but you know, I have the articles for Sunday afternoon or Sunday or for Sunday's slate. So I'm sitting here and I'm like, I mentioned a podcast. I know Joe is not available, but the cool thing about our Slack channel and everybody we have working for us at FTN is just send out the signal and you got a bunch of people that are willing to come on. So appreciate you coming on. In case anybody doesn't know, tell everybody what you're doing at FTN specifically for NBA. Cause I know you run the projections and the ownership and stuff like that. But Joe and I are always talking about the stuff that we're doing on the pod in terms of the articles, but, what are you doing yourself on top of, every other sport?
Yeah, like Adam mentioned, I'm doing the four major sports and projections and ownership for most of them are actually all the four major ones. So I obviously have my hands full with NBA right now. That's probably the most hectic one in terms of projections and ownership because it's constantly changing. But yeah, every single day, Monday through Friday, I have my player rater report, which features my custom player rater metric that I've made over the past couple of years that basically is just a number 1 through 100. And I kind of talk about the article there and what that model is kind of featuring and talking about on that slate. So do that every single day. Got the ownership, the projections, and then the live stream 5 to 6 most days with Stefano and Chris Meany. So we have that going on as well. And then, yeah, like you mentioned, all the other sports, NFL still going on, and we don't know baseball yet. So now it's just NFL and NBA, and that's kind of I don't mind it like that at all.
How insufferable has Steph been after 2 blowouts by the Brooklyn Nets?
So I actually haven't after the both days, like I haven't heard anything about him yet, so I'm kind of waiting for the big day when it comes and the net rant happens. So nothing yet, but I'll keep you posted. I'm sure it'll happen soon.
Yeah, they look really good. I can't even lie,
they do.
But yeah, at the end of the day, they're 2-0 just like the Cleveland Cavaliers, so
amen.
They played Detroit and Charlotte, so and they had to go to double overtime tonight to beat Detroit. Let's get to these games though. Like you said, 9 of them. This is one of those slates where, first of all, if you're playing NBA, you've already decided you're not leaving the house from, 4 to 7:30, if you leave the house at all. But this is especially one of those slates where a lot of back-to-backs, a lot of potential veterans that are going to rest, and we'll have to keep an eye on that throughout the day. But we'll start with Brooklyn and Charlotte. This game, not as much of a threat for that. Brooklyn hasn't played since Christmas. Charlotte is coming off the second of back-to-back. Brooklyn, with the way they're playing right now, you kind of have to worry about some blowouts with them. As much as you do worry about blowouts, if that is something that crosses your mind, they're 8-point favorites on the road here at 226 total. I mean, Kyrie and Durant, with the way they're playing right now, they're both still priced at a point where they're probably a little bit too cheap, in my opinion. And if anything, they're kind of priced just right. For me, Durant on DraftKings is 9,400, Kyrie's 9,100. I'm just going to play Kyrie whenever he's cheaper. I think his minutes are a little bit safer. Although they both played 33 minutes last game. Durant didn't step on the floor in the fourth quarter because they pulled away in that game. I think Kyrie played 5 minutes in the fourth quarter. But both with the way they're playing right now should be in line for good games. And my goodness, if they actually can play the fourth quarter, I mean, the ceiling is obviously massive. We saw what the ceiling was with Kyrie, especially last game. So thoughts on Brooklyn, because it obviously starts with these two guys.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's kind of if anybody had any questions on how these two would mesh, I feel like those questions are kind of gone now. They both looked really, really good together, and Kevin Durant has looked pretty healthy. So that's always a good sign for someone coming off a serious injury like the Achilles. And it is a fantastic matchup here. Charlotte hasn't really showed a lot of signs of being able to slow anybody down. I don't think anybody expected them to. They like to play in kind of an undersized fashion now that they added LaMelo Ball. And I know he's a taller point guard, but still not a guy that's going to really match up with, you know, longer and beefier players. So with them trying to get Rozier, Graham, LaMelo, and Gordon Hayward out there, they're not going to be a massive team. So not going to play a whole lot of amazing defense. So it should be a good spot for Brooklyn. It may be a good spot for these big men. Obviously, the talk starts with KD and Kyrie. I'm kind of with you. I'm totally fine with playing Kyrie because he's a cheaper one. And like you mentioned, his minutes are more secure. But it's all going to come down to positional stuff for me, like what kind of position I think is going to be stronger. KD's in a spot with AD, Giannis, Jason Tatum, Sabonis, Zion. So for me, like, I just think he has a little bit more of a competition there. Now, I know Kyrie's got guys like Westbrook, who I guess we'll talk about more there, and then LeBron. But still, I just think the position at point guard is a little bit weaker, and the guard position overall is a little bit weaker. So I do think I give Kyrie the slight edge in that fashion. But over on FanDuel, they're actually about the same price. So KD is 9.5 and Kyrie's 9.4. So it's pretty much the same thing. And again, the positional stuff all pretty much stays the same. So yeah, I'm Kyrie over KD for this one.
Yeah, and I was looking at the advanced DVP we have with the archetypes and everything like that. And Charlotte, like, we know they don't profile as a great defense in general, but they were dead last against superstars, which is not good facing Kyrie and Kevin Durant. So I expect really productive games from them. And if Charlotte can keep it close, I mean, they could both go for like 55 or 60. It wouldn't surprise me. The problem with this team right now is they're still using that timeshare at center with Jared Allen and DeAndre Jordan. Allen's just the more productive player, but he's, you know, maxing out at like maybe 22 minutes. And like, he played 21 minutes in a blowout. So like, if the game stays close, maybe he's at 20 and Jordan's at like 24. But like, they're both priced to a point where even in a great matchup like this, especially with Charlotte, you know, they're bad against, you know, centers in the first place. And, you know, now Cody Zeller's out. But like, I don't see how you can trust either of these guys unless one's out of the lineup, because Jared Allen's 6K and Jordan's 5,500. And then Caris LeVert, like 6,500, he's coming off the bench, but he's, you know, he only played 19 minutes because he didn't get all the fourth quarter minutes with a bunch of like third string and fourth string players and dominate the usage. So I don't know how I feel about him. If I'm playing one Brooklyn player other than Kyrie or Durant, it might actually be Joe Harris. He's 4,900. Which is a much better price tag. He's getting just ridiculously open looks in this offense, because why wouldn't he when you have to worry about so many other players? And Charlotte last year, they were pretty awful against spot-up shooters. Actually, they have the second most points per game to spot-up shooters at 30.4 per game. And per our advanced DVP, they were 25th against shooters in general. And Joe Harris is literally just spotting up in this offense and getting open looks. We'll walk into some random rebound game. So I don't hate Joe Harris at 4,900, but do you have interest in Harris or LeVert or Dinwiddie's actually not terrible at 5,500. The problem is I didn't think he'd be starting this season, which, you know, hurts his usage rate when he's playing alongside Durant and Kyrie Irving.
Yeah, I think that you kind of summed it up pretty well there for me. LeVert is a guy who, based on the way he worked in the first game, how he was the guy with that second unit leading it, like, that's a spot that I think could show some real value at times. But if he's going to be that guy and then not get blowout run either, because he didn't get it on Christmas Day. So it's really hard to judge LeVert right now, because he had such a massive game one, and then game two was a kind of a lackluster performance there. So, I mean, if we can get LeVert with some more minutes, I would always be willing to play him, because he just is so good. But for me, Dinwiddie's the guy on FanDuel. He's 4,800 over there and at shooting guard. So I guess it's not the star-studded position. So I don't mind it there, 4,800. Looked like he got some blowout run last game as well. He played 29 minutes in that one, so maybe we can count on Dinwiddie for a little bit of that. He's always been a decent, permanent performer, nothing spectacular, but not bad by any means. So I think Dinwiddie would probably be my favorite one outside of the top two on FanDuel, and then Joe Harris would probably follow Dinwiddie there. He's 43 on FanDuel. On DraftKings, I like Harris more than Dinwiddie, but on FanDuel, I think Dinwiddie's a better option. But yeah, Harris kind of feels safe for the minutes. Like, obviously in a blowout, everyone's kind of going to get hurt there. But 26 minutes in that last game, if he's going to be around there as like his floor, I think that's a pretty good baseline there for Harris. He's obviously going to be a guy that hovers around 30, 32 minutes in games that stay competitive and obviously has that upside for more. So Harris for me on DraftKings and then Dinwiddie on FanDuel.
Let's go to Charlotte. We had Bismack Biyombo start on Saturday night with Cody Zeller out. Was pretty productive. I mean, nothing crazy, but 5 points, 9 rebounds, 4 assists, and 2 blocks in 30 minutes. He was like 3,600 on DraftKings, I think. I think he's the same price, actually. He's 3,800. So, I mean, we know Brooklyn is going to deploy a traditional center at all times with Jared Allen or DeAndre Jordan. So Biyombo's going to have to play, you know, 28 to 30 minutes again. He's 3,800, and in his starts last year, he averaged just under 9 points, just under 8 rebounds, and over a block per game. So he really doesn't have to do much at that price tag, and he's got a bunch of playmakers around him to help him, you know, get easy looks with LaMelo, with Devontae Graham, and Gordon Hayward.
Yeah, I think that's the biggest point for me, is that he's got so many, like, just people just looking to pass him. Like, when LaMelo's on the floor with him, he's genuinely looking to create plays with the pass. So I really like that for Biyombo, and the price tag is obviously amazing there. So I think he is probably the best value option here in this game. But a guy that I like is like a sneaky additional kind of pickup. It's not a ton, but PJ Washington, he's just a good player in general, a guy that can stretch the floor, hit threes. And when they slide him down to the five, which they typically don't do a ton of when Zeller's healthy, but
they did tonight.
They were able to tonight. So hopefully that leads to more of a repetitive thing. Zeller's going to be out 4 to 6 weeks, so we'll get more of a time or more of a baseline on what Washington's going to do there. But they had him at least two or three different rotations where he was playing the five, and that's obviously going to boost his production from a rebounding standpoint and maybe from a block shot standpoint. But, yeah, I like Washington a pretty good amount. 5,400 on DraftKings, the price is up a bit. 5,300 on FanDuel, they priced him up a bit as well. I think he was 4,800 the day before. So I'm liking PJ Washington pretty much. I don't know if I prefer him over Biyombo, but definitely not on a point per dollar standpoint. But I definitely like him a lot.
Before we got on the podcast, you were hoping for a Myles Gaskin touchdown.
I was, and I just saw that he had a big one.
This game's crazy. Yeah, that's a good call, though. Like, he did move to some small ball five tonight, and like, while Jared Allen and Jordan are traditionally going to be on the floor, you know, one of them, like, the Nets can play Durant at the five and just go for a death lineup with, you know, Dinwiddie, Harris, LeVert, and Durant. Like, they will do that sometimes, and if that's the case, PJ Washington will play center and get a lot of rebounding opportunities, so I don't hate that call at all. I'm not really on anybody else from Charlotte. Like, Rozier, he had that huge game against Cleveland, but, like, he just could not miss from three. His minutes seem to be secured now until they start to get, you know, LaMelo a little bit more acclimated. But once that happens, Rozier's minutes might go down. He might even get traded or something. Devontae Graham, 6,500. Like, the floor is there. I don't know if the ceiling is going to be there, especially in this spot. So I'm not really on the rest of Charlotte.
I like Graham a lot on FanDuel. Just a quick note to make. Mm-hmm. He's 5,400 over there. So it's just like a pricing error. This is a guy that we saw him go for 40 or 50 points at times last year. I know they added LaMelo Ball, so that's going to hurt a little bit of the stability that he brings, but 33 minutes in that game against Oklahoma City, and they are doing a thing where they'll take him out first and put LaMelo in, and then by the time he's back in the game, some of those main ball handlers like Gordon Hayward or like Terry Rozier, they're off the floor, so that helps a guy like Devonta Graham. He kind of gets more of an opportunity to run the floor and kind of be the guy, the scorer on the court. So I like Graham a pretty good amount over on FanDuel. Don't know if I like him a ton on DraftKings, where he's priced up a little bit, but he's 6,500 over there, so don't love him over there. But on FanDuel, I think he's a very strong play.
All right. Let's move on to maybe the most important game of the slate as of right now in terms of news. Orlando at Washington. This is a home-and-home. These teams played on Saturday night. 228 total right now. It's early, with Washington opening as 1.5-point favorites. So in the preseason and you know, before the season started, Scott Brooks talked about resting, you know, Russell Westbrook and Davis Bertans in back-to-backs. So Westbrook and Bertans both played on Saturday night. Bertans was limited with his minutes again. Westbrook triple-doubled again. So if he sticks by that, these guys would probably sit this game. But he also hasn't confirmed that they'll rest yet. Like, there's a chance Westbrook doesn't sit. I think Bertans is going to sit regardless because they've been limiting his minutes, so it would just make sense. This is pretty self-explanatory, though. Like, if Westbrook sits, even at 8,900 in a slower paced game against a decent Orlando defense, I mean, Bradley Beal just put up like 39 points. Yeah, he put up 39 points tonight. His usage rate is going to, I mean, his usage rate's around like 35% through two games with Westbrook, but like it could get up to 40, honestly. And we know how good Bradley Beal is. So how much would we like Beal, and what would this do for the rest of Washington if Westbrook and Bertans are out? Because if Bertans is out, like, he's only playing like 20 minutes a night, but with Rui Hachimura already out, like, that just takes another player out of the rotation, which means maybe you go, like, the problem is, like, Denny's minutes were down tonight after he started and played 28 minutes in the opening game. So, let's start with Beal. I mean, how much would we like him if Westbrook sits, and what would the rest of Washington look like?
Yeah, I mean, if we see Beal kind of be the main guy there now without Westbrook there with him out, I think he would kind of just go back to obviously similar to what he was last year and maybe even a little bit more of increased usage. And now he's just way too cheap. Like, we saw him in the 10Ks at times last year on DraftKings. He's 8,900. On FanDuel, he's 8,500. So if we do see Westbrook out, obviously, we're kind of trying to speculate so we can get like a head start on this news. And like you mentioned, Scott Brooks is going to probably, hopefully, confirm it, but he said we'll see. I think today, something along those lines, to paraphrase. So we don't know for sure.
He pretty much just said he's still unsure. So
yeah, he's playing games with us pretty much. But yeah, I think Beal would just be a fantastic play, and it might even be a spot where we see people not necessarily go to that because of the stigma that Orlando has, where they play slow, they play decent defense, and they just make the game ugly. But obviously, we're going off a very small sample size, but after two games, Orlando's 11th in pace, so maybe they're going to be playing faster. I don't want to make, you know, obviously going off of two games is not what we're going to do here, but at least we know that there's going to be a reason for them to play faster because Washington plays so fast. Like, looking at where they were last year, top three in pace, back to being top five in pace this year, like, Washington's going to play fast, so that's just going to be good for Beal in its own right. So I would like Beal a ton, and I would be hoping that the public wouldn't flock to that, maybe with that stigma around Orlando. But if Bertans is ruled out, that's massive for me, because then obviously with Hachimura already being out, I think we see Denny Avdia get right back in the starting lineup. Well, maybe he won't start, but I think he'll get right back into that rotation and be a little bit more incorporated into that. Once we saw that Bertans hit the limit, I think he played 19 and they pulled him out. Avdia came in fairly late in the game. He actually hit a big three. So I think he had 12 minutes with like 6 minutes in the game left. And then with like three or four minutes left, they brought him back in. He played 2 minutes. So not that means a ton, but it would lead me to believe that Avdia would be a little bit more involved in the rotation. Obviously, it would be something that isn't necessarily secure because they could give those minutes to a guy like Troy Brown. But Avdia looks like a pretty decent prospect. So maybe we see him get a few more minutes, but obviously I think Beal would just be the guy for me here in Washington.
And if I'm not mistaken, when he was playing overseas, like, he was a sneaky, decent, like, facilitator. So, like, he could maybe take on more of a role in that regard if Westbrook's out too. If Westbrook is out, Ish Smith's not really cheap. I wouldn't be in love with anybody else. Like, the problem is, like, they're giving Isaac Bonga 20 minutes and Avdija's playing, like, 15 to 25 minutes, and Troy Brown's playing like 15 minutes. Like, they're all playing in that. Like, so it, because Bertans wasn't playing 35 minutes, he was only playing 20. It doesn't all have to go to one guy. Like, it could potentially get spread out, and they could just all get like a couple more minutes a game. So I don't think anybody's a priority. Thomas Bryant could be sneaky because Westbrook is back to just dominating the rebounds.
Yeah.
Kind of like what he was doing in Oklahoma City, where he was just crashing the boards and everybody else is kind of letting him get the rebounds. He's 6,500, he had 19 points, but he only had 5 rebounds tonight. I think this could be a spot where his rebounding rate goes way up, and nobody's going to talk about him because he's playing in the same game with Bradley Beal, where everybody's going to go, okay, Bradley Beal is obviously the main beneficiary. Any interest in Bryant? Like, he's kind of priced awkwardly, where center's always such a loaded position that it's kind of hard to really get excited about centers in that $6,500 range, because it's so easy to just want to pay up for Embiid and Anthony Davis and Towns and those guys.
Yeah, I think that's a great call there with the sneaky rebounding upside if Westbrook were to sit. I think it's a good thing for him that we haven't seen Mo Wagner be involved in the rotation. He's played 5 minutes in two games. It's a bad thing for my heart because I'm a diehard Michigan fan, and obviously he was a beloved Wolverine. But yeah, I think it's a good sign that he's going to at least hover around that 30-minute mark most nights. And that's obviously a good thing for Thomas Bryant. One guy picking up a pretty significant amount of minutes is Jerome Robinson based on his one game. I know he didn't play in the opening game due to an illness, I believe is what I saw. But yeah, 19 minutes in this one. So that might have been another thing that hurt Avdija. So maybe that's one thing to know or at least monitor. Maybe if Westbrook comes out, this is a guy that he can play point guard as well. So maybe he picks up a few more minutes. Maybe he's actually the main.
Yeah, that's a good call, actually. I forgot he didn't play in that first game.
Yeah, he might actually be the guy that picks up the majority of the minutes from Westbrook or maybe even Bertans because he can play the wing as well.
He played
so that...
19, almost 20 minutes tonight. He played more than Troy Brown, more than Denny, more than – or just about the same as Bunga. And, like, if Westbrook's out, like you said, he can play point if Ish is out of the game or whatever. So, it's a really good call.
Yeah, so I think overall it's going to be a spot where if you're MMing or something, you're probably going to want something along the lines of, hey, only have one of Troy Brown, Denny, Bunga. Right. You probably don't even really want Bunga, but you guys get the point. Like, there's a clear group of guys like Robinson, Bunga, Troy Brown, and Avdija who are kind of all going to eat at each other's minutes. But I do think Smith's minutes are going to be fairly stable, especially if Westbrook's out. 22 minutes in back-to-back games, I think we see that creep up near 30 if Westbrook's out of the lineup. And I know the price on DraftKings is brutal. You probably don't like him a ton over there, but on FanDuel, it's $3,900. So that's a pretty good price point. So he'd probably be the main guy that would benefit.
For Orlando, you know, usually start with Nikola Vucevic, who... Yep. I wrote about it in the first game-by-game article of the year. Like in cash games, like, he has one of the best floors in fantasy. Last year, he went for at least 40 fantasy points in 71% of his games. He was at 39 DK points in the first game, and he bounced back on Saturday night. Obviously, it's the same matchup here. The price is really nice on Vucevic on DraftKings. I think he's 8,300. Yeah, 8,300. Like, when he's around this price tag, he's just so safe. So it's hard not to like him. Washington was a really bad pick-and-roll defense last year, too. He didn't shoot the ball particularly well on Saturday night, but we know what the potential is for him. And then Aaron Gordon, like, he's still somewhat being limited in minutes. He was limited to 26 in the first game, and they said they would move his minutes up Saturday night, and I believe he played right around 30. Yes, he played 30 minutes in this game. So is he a potential person that they could say, all right, we're already limiting your minutes. Now it's the second end of back-to-back. Maybe he sits at the worst. Like, if he plays, he's probably maxing out at 30 minutes. So for me, I'm kind of mad that Terrence Ross had a really nice game on Saturday night because I really like this spot for him in general. He's the beneficiary of no Jonathan Isaac and a limited, to an extent, Aaron Gordon, and the fact that James Ennis is out. Like, he played 28 minutes in the first game of the season. I think he played 30 tonight. Let me double check. He played 30 or 29. I mean, it's the same thing anyway. He played 28. So he played 28 minutes in both games, took 14 shots, had 25 points. And it's a good matchup because with what he does, all they do is run him off screens. He led the NBA in points per game off screens last year. And Washington, they allowed the most points per possession off screens in the league last year. I 4,700, I like Terrence Ross a lot. I just kind of wish he didn't have that huge game. Not huge game, but really productive game on Saturday. Who do you like from Orlando?
Yeah, I'm with you. I like Ross as well, especially if we see Gordon out. Obviously, more speculation that we're just trying to make based on what we've seen in the NBA in the past, and I think that is a common thing where guys who are on minutes limits, especially early in the year, especially guys who have injury history and maybe older guys, they'll typically be limited or essentially sat out on back-to-back. So I would not be surprised whatsoever if we see Gordon out here, and that's a nice boost to Vucevic, who he'll get a rebounding boost there, and then also a shot boost. Like, Gordon's a guy that's going to try to get some shots up. More guys that'll benefit Fournier, get some shots up. He's a little bit priced up on FanDuel, and then on DraftKings, I would obviously or also rather just go to Terrence Ross there. So yeah, I agree pretty much completely with that. The one guy that I think it could be sneaky, but he's also coming off of a fairly big game on Saturday night. That's Markel Fultz. This guy just looks so good to start the year so far. He looks very quick and elusive, and really, I don't want to say this because obviously I typically like to back things up with numbers, but this is more just an eyeball test. I've watched both the Orlando's games, and maybe a reason why they're playing a bit faster is because of Markel Fultz. Like, we've seen it happen with the Grizzlies last year, how they were one of the slower paced teams. They drafted John Morant. He starts, now they're in the top five in terms of pace throughout the entire year. Markel Fultz looks like a guy who he's trying to push the pace on his own. So obviously, again, small sample size, and it's an eyeball test thing. So that's kind of just what I've seen so far. Fultz, I really like a lot. And also, I think if we ever see a game where Fultz, maybe even Michael Carter-Williams are out, Cole Anthony is going to win somebody a ton of money. That guy is going to be very good for DFS. We haven't really seen him get the minutes. He hasn't even hit 20 yet, and he's averaging over 20 points per game for fantasy points. So Cole Anthony just looks like he's trying to do it all on the court, and he's very aggressive. Maybe Markel Fultz is a guy that they sit on the back-to-back. Don't know, but yeah, Markel Fultz is a guy that I like. And kind of just a future note, if we ever see Cole Anthony get a start or something like that, I think he could be very good for fantasy.
I mean, all it would take is Michael Carter-Williams to sit, because they played, like when that happened, you could play Augustine or Fultz last year. I played Augustine a lot. So yeah, I think that's a really good call. And the only thing if Westbrook sits, this game will be a lot slower than it was, because in general, but like, it's not always like the end all be all for, especially for set, like a guy like Nikola Vucevic, he sometimes is better in slower paced games, because he's a guy that does a lot of his work in the post, or a lot of his work in the pick and roll, and he wants, you know, a lot of his possessions on offense come in the half court set. Like, he's not a guy that he's not Anthony Davis or Giannis, or like, he's not running the floor very often and getting dunks in transition. So it's not always the worst thing for him. But yeah, this is one of the many games where you just got to make sure guys are in the lineup, because we could see a handful of guys potentially sit. Let's move on to San Antonio at the New Orleans Pelicans. I mean, back-to-back for the Spurs is always an intriguing concept for DFS. Let's start with New Orleans, though. We last saw them on Christmas. Dude, I started writing about it. I mean, their rotations right now are super tight in New Orleans. Stan Van Gundy is literally playing Brandon Ingram and Zion like 37 minutes. And then, like, their last game, I think six players played 28 minutes or more, and then everybody else was, like, barely used. Like, they're running, like, an eight-man rotation. It's really a nine-man rotation, but that ninth player is playing, like, 5 minutes at most. So it's, like, an eight-man rotation right now for the Pelicans, which is really good for fantasy. I mean, Brandon Ingram's played 37 minutes in both games. At 8K, like, with the shot volume he has, the usage rate's around 30%. He's averaging like seven isolation possessions per game. Like, he's just got the ball in his hands so much. So at 8K, unless he just literally can't hit a shot, it's going to be hard for him to really let you down. Now, the peripherals aren't great, but I mean, it's just minutes, man. Minutes are the first thing you look at, and he and Zion are playing a ton of them.
Yeah, and that's kind of what you want to see, right, out of a fantasy. When you're talking DFS, you kind of want to see those tight rotations. Those are teams that you want to target.
Not playoff rotation. It's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, you love to see it. And not to mention this matchup, San Antonio has just been brutal defensively to start the season in their two games. It's just been – it's really looked like a team that we're going to want to target throughout the entire course of the year. And, I mean, obviously, why not do that here with guys like Ingram, like Zion. Don't even mind Lonzo Ball. He's 6'6 on FanDuel. That price tag feels
at 6'2 on DraftKings, quite good.
Yeah, 6'2 on DraftKings is a very good price. It'll be interesting to see how they handle DeJounte Murray. He's a guy that's historically been limited, like, throughout his entire career, just based on injuries and minutes and stuff like that. But I don't know what it is, but Popovich just feels a bit different this year. Like, they brought Keldon Johnson off of a lengthy injury and put him in the starting lineup, and they played him 30 minutes, I believe, in back-to-back games, or at least close. So maybe it's just a little bit of a different scene here in San Antonio. Maybe they'll be a little bit looser with DeJounte Murray, who I think is just a fantastic player. So I would love to target him in this, what should be a pretty fast-paced matchup. Even though I believe that New Orleans, a lot of guys at FTN here believe New Orleans defense is going to get better with Stan Van Gundy as the coach, but they're still probably going to play at a fairly fast pace. They were, I believe, top five in pace last year, and I would expect them to be up in that top half again this year. So should be an interesting game. Probably my favorite one of the slate, or at least one of them. So yeah, Zion is the guy that I think I like the most. Again, like, I think by the end of the year, he's going to be a guy that is up near 10K. That might be a little bit of a hot take, but I mean, he's already almost in the 9Ks when you consider where he started. I think he started low sevens. He's already up $1,000. So I think he's going to continue to go up with how many minutes they're allowing him to play and the usage that he has. So Zion's a guy that I'm going to try to play as much as I can while he's still 8-2. I think Ingram could potentially be a guy that's going to find its way in the nines as well. So playing both of these guys at a lower price tag, if you're with me and you believe that price tag is going to be higher at the end of the year. So those two guys and Lonzo are guys that I'm going to continue to look to play.
No interest in Eric Bledsoe after his Christmas Day game?
I played Eric Bledsoe on Christmas. I think I had four lineups between FanDuel and DraftKings because I didn't want to MME because I wasn't going to be home or anything. Mm-hmm. And I played him in all four. So it didn't go great. But I mean, I don't mind it. Like I think potentially people are going to be down on him. But I think on a smaller slate, like that five game slate on Christmas, it was easier to play him. Now he's 5-6. For example, I would rather play Devontae Graham. He's 5,400 on FanDuel, while Bledsoe's 5,600. So on FanDuel, I would just rather play Devontae Graham.
Yeah, I agree. And like the Spurs are kind of playing a little bit faster so far this year too, which is definitely nice to see with them. I think DeRozan's kind of fine at 7,300. Aldridge doesn't look good at all. I just don't think there's a ceiling with LaMarcus Aldridge anymore. So I'm not really interested in him. Same with Steven Adams. Like, there's just other centers I'd rather play. It's really just Zion. Like I said, Zion played 38 minutes on Christmas, and his minutes were down in the opening game because he got in foul trouble. If he doesn't get in foul trouble, he probably plays 35 minutes or so again. So close projected game here. Zion and Brandon Ingram should both play 36 minutes, which early in the season, not a lot of players are going to be playing 36 minutes. You know, like... Yep. We've talked like LeBron, Frank Vogel's talk. We'll talk about that, but Frank Vogel's talking about playing LeBron like max 32, 33 minutes out the gate. Like if guys playing 36, 37 minutes is massive for you. So anything else from this game?
No, that's pretty much it for me.
All right. Ryan Fitzpatrick, I don't have the game on, but he apparently did more Ryan Fitzpatrick crazy things. So
he threw a bomb down the sideline for about 40 or 50 yards. And then he kicked the game winning field goal. So that's pretty Fitzmagic-y.
As a Bills fan, I'm about it. I would love to play Miami in the first round of the playoffs. Although I would feel worse about it if Fitzpatrick's starting. But he's the man. All right, let's go to Cleveland and the Philadelphia 76ers. Both these teams also coming off a game Saturday. Both these teams coming off wins. Cleveland's at home here. Now, again, Kevin Love, it definitely seems like this is a candidate to sit. He was apparently supposed to have a minutes limit on Saturday, but that game went to double overtime, so I think he played like 36, 37 minutes. Maybe Drummond sits too. Like, Cleveland could sit guys here. And, like, I don't think Philadelphia will sit Embiid or anybody, but, like, if there is one player that they would, it would be Joel Embiid. Otherwise, I don't think they're going to sit anybody. Cleveland's been interesting so far this year because Darius Garland has looked really good through two games. Again, it's a small sample size, and they played Detroit and Charlotte, so they haven't really played anybody. This is obviously their toughest test, but through two games, 21.5 points, 9 assists, 5.5 rebounds per game. He's looks more comfortable. He's the, like, for me, like, I love Sexton. I think he's really underrated. He's one of the more underrated scorers in basketball, but when Garland's $1,200 cheaper on DraftKings, and you know you're getting peripherals with Garland as opposed to Sexton, I just tend to lean Garland. Like, right now, I don't really love Cleveland because they're facing an elite defense in Philadelphia. They're priced up. Like, even if Kevin Love's out, Larry Nance has been priced up already, as they're expecting it. He's 6,800. And then, Drummond's fairly priced at 8,600 if he plays, but he has not been good against Embiid throughout his career. He's averaging just over 41 DK points per game in his career against Joel Embiid, and he has two games under 30 fantasy points. Plus, we know Embiid draws a ton of fouls. So I'm not interested in Drummond at all. I'm not interested in Larry Nance at 6,800. And I probably won't get to Sexton, especially with Ben Simmons being on the other side of that matchup. So for me, it's kind of just Darius Garland from Cleveland.
Yeah, I think if I had to place a bet on the most likely person to sit on this slate, it would be Kevin Love. They mentioned early in the offseason and also often that they wanted to monitor both Kevin Love and Andre Drummond on back-to-backs. Doc Rivers actually came out right before the game started tonight and said, we'll see on limiting Joel Embiid's minutes on back-to-backs. So maybe he'll play, but he could potentially have his minutes monitored or limited. So yeah, I think Kevin Love would be the most likely candidate to sit here. And I'm with you. I don't really get too all excited about anybody on this team except for Garland. Garland's price is up on FanDuel a pretty good amount. He's 6,200 now, so I prefer him on DraftKings. But, just not really too excited or thrilled about much of anybody on this team. Really, like, we saw Isaac Okoro play 42 minutes in that double overtime game and put up 4 fantasy points.
He pulled Tony Snell.
Tony Snell, yeah. He In the Discord chat, we call it Fitbit minutes now. I think that's I think that's an awesome term for it. But yeah, like it's going to take him a while to recover that fantasy point per minute. 0.11, I had to calculate it because I actually played him on a FanDuel lineup today. So 0.11 fantasy points per minute. So that's not going to be a good number for you if you keep that going. So Okoro, if you're listening to this, get those numbers up, please. But it'd be interesting to see kind of what these minutes do, because if a guy like Love and also a guy like Andre Drummond are out, Nance probably slides down to the five a good amount. I know we're going to see McGee play the five and potentially Thon Maker, but they played Nance at the five pretty frequently last year. I know they play him at the three at times, but they could play him at the five, and that would potentially give more minutes to a guy like Chetty Osman, who I've always kind of liked to play him in DFS, DraftKings, or FanDuel, really, because he kind of just fills up the stash. He's never really going to be too flashy of a guy, but they never mind running him out there for a ton of minutes if they need to. Maybe now this year they haven't needed to as much because they've been able to give Okoro 70 minutes throughout the first two games. But Osman's a guy that could potentially have some value if Nance is going to maybe start at the five if both Love and Drummond are out. I think a big indicator will be who's starting. It'll probably just be what they had on opening night if Drummond is in and Love is out. But I wouldn't be surprised necessarily to see something shaken up a bit. Maybe Osman starts. They actually were playing Osman over Okoro in the overtime on Friday or on Saturday night. Maybe it was because he sucked and they kind of realized, like, hey, get Jetty in there and we'll call it a day. So maybe things change here. So it's something to monitor. But I think Osman would be really the only guy I have a ton of interest in at their prices right now.
Yeah, and it helps that I don't think Kevin Porter Jr. is expected to be back for this game yet either. So it helps solidify the minutes there. What about Philadelphia? Good matchup all around, really. Simmons is 9,200 on DraftKings. Embiid seems a little underpriced at 9,800. He's been great in both games so far this season. Like, he's had Drummond's number. We'd always match up proof. Like, I just think whenever Joel Embiid's under 10K, I'm going to have interest for sure. Tobias hasn't been too sharp so far this season. 6,600 isn't a bad price tag. And then you have Seth Curry, 5,100. I love Seth Curry this year. He at that price, he's kind of more of like a, if he just fits my lineup. I don't know, like Cleveland or Philadelphia's got a great matchup here, but Simmons at 9,200 doesn't seem like a must. I love Embiid, obviously, but then where else do you go? Because it's hard to get excited about Tobias. Shake Milton could have a nice game here. He played 30 minutes in the first game, and he closed that close game, but he only played 23 tonight. But if this game stays closer, maybe they close with him again because they closed with him over Danny Green in that close game. Maybe he gets a 30 minutes at 5,600, and Cleveland was like, I think they were dead last against opposing bench units last year, so he could be a sneaky option. Anybody from Philly stand out outside of Embiid? Because unless you don't like Embiid.
Yeah, I like Embiid as long as there's no like real limit on him. But I mean, even if he plays,
right? If he plays 32 instead of 35, or like he's under 10K.
Yeah, I mean, so like the thing for me is if we get a limit and they like say he's going to be limited to 28 minutes, I'll probably be off of him. But if they're saying, hey, we're going to monitor his minutes, mm-hmm. I probably wouldn't mind taking a shot here just because that would probably push some ownership down on him. And still, like if he plays 30 minutes, if he's able to get to 30, I still think he could smash here. It's going to be such a good matchup, especially if we see Drummond out. Like if we see Drummond out, I know McGee's a solid defender in his own right, but I just think Embiid is going to kind of go crazy in this. But a guy that I think is just underpriced is Tobias Harris. I know he struggled to start the year. 66 on DraftKings, 62 on FanDuel, or 64 on FanDuel, sorry. But on FanDuel is more so cheaper. But I just think if he really gets his shot going, obviously he's had a bad game, and then I would probably call it a floor game, 32 mm-hmm. in that game against New York, 32 FanDuel points. So I think, you know, if we're going to see him put up 32 as his floor, it won't kill you at 6,400. Obviously, you want a more of a ceiling game, and I think the matchup here could kind of get you there on that. But yeah, for me, it's basically just Embiid and Tobias. I think, you know, Ben Simmons, he's been really good to start the year in terms of fantasy, like 48 FanDuel points and then 40 fantasy points. Like for a guy that's just, when you're talking about consistency, and then he'll have the big games as well. Like if he's going to stay around there in terms of his average, he's going to have a very good year. And obviously, it's probably a little bit better on FanDuel because he's not going to hit threes and he's going to get more so blocks and steals. So on FanDuel, I'd probably like him more over there. But I guess I wouldn't mind playing Simmons. But yeah, the price is up. And when you're talking about just comparing him to Embiid, I think for 600 more, I think I'd rather have Embiid.
Moving on, Milwaukee at the New York Knicks. The Bucks, I mean, Another game where we go into it, and Giannis is really at a nice price tag. He's just 10-5 on DraftKings, and we know he's as efficient as anybody in the league. But Mike Budenholzer, in games where they're well ahead, has no issues playing Giannis like 28 minutes. And when you have multiple superstars in the slate, it's hard to feel great about Giannis, even with how efficient he is at 28 minutes. So Milwaukee here, I mean, I think the early line is they're up. They're 11.5 point favorites, 223.5 total. What do you think of the Bucks here? I mean, Middleton's been fantastic. He's pushing 8K, but he's been their best player through two games. Giannis has been struggling shooting the ball, but you know the rebounds are always going to be there. I'm not gonna lie, like Giannis is a hard guy to get too excited about for me, at least at this moment.
Yeah, I mean, when you talk about kind of the recent form, I guess you could call it, that he's in, it's obviously not great. Like, you obviously look for more. He kind of got there in his first game, I guess, but it still wasn't pretty by any means. And for me, the issue isn't only just, like, the studs that you're kind of competing with on the slate, but it's also the power forwards. Like, Anthony Davis, he's questionable, but we'll talk about Anthony Davis, Jason Tatum, Sabonis, Zion. Like, there's a lot of good power forwards on this slate that are just a lot cheaper. So I think in the grand scheme of things, I would rather just take a shot on a guy who's probably going to be in a more competitive game, get more minutes. Like, it's very likely that we don't see Giannis hit that 30-minute mark again. And it's just going to be kind of the nature of the beast with the Bucks if they're going to keep dominating these teams. And I expect the Knicks to be a team that they dominate. So I guess my favorite here would probably be Jrue Holiday, I guess. Like, I just think he's probably a little bit too cheap on FanDuel specifically. He's 7K over there. He's 6'9 on DraftKings, so that price isn't bad either. Bucks are going to play at a fast pace. They're number one. They were number one last year. They're in the top 10 this year, so something to monitor if that pace slows down a bit. But still, I think it's a team that wants to play fast. And so for me, I guess my favorite option would be Holiday or maybe a sneaky Dante DiVincenzo. He's been playing pretty well to start the year. Let me see what his price is on FanDuel, because he's 5'2 on DraftKings, which I don't love, but he's 4'9 on FanDuel, so I don't hate that. So Dante and probably Jrue Holiday is my number one buck.
Yeah, I've played Dante in both games so far. He's been solid for them. Milwaukee's not really going to be too much of a priority for me on this slate. If New York can keep it close, then obviously Giannis could be the highest scoring player on the slate. Wouldn't surprise anybody. For New York, though, they're kind of interesting because we know they've had a bit of a crowded front court for a while now, but their first overall draft pick, Obi Toppin, is out for 7 to 10 days. So that opens up minutes in the front court, and you know he's a guy that can play multiple positions. So Julius Randle's like, Randle has always been a really good fantasy producer. Last year, for the first half of the season, the minutes were all over the place for New York, and then the rotation's kind of tightened, and Randle is great. He was pretty effective again against the Sixers in 35 minutes on Saturday. He's up to 7,700. It's expensive, but the floor seems to be really high for him. And then with Obi topping out, like, does anybody else stand out? I'm going to pull up the minutes for New York tonight, but like Kevin Knox, I mean, RJ Barrett's, like, we know the starters with Tom Thibodeau there are going to be locked into really, really, really significant minutes, which is great. And RJ Barrett was brutal tonight, but you know, Ben Simmons locked him up. Ben Simmons is arguably the best on-ball defender in the NBA, so it gets better. Well, maybe not so much in this spot because they have, you know, Middleton and Giannis and Jrue Holiday, who are all great defenders. But I take that as mostly just a really bad spot. But the minutes, I mean, Alec Burks played almost 31 minutes. Knox pushed 29 minutes and wasn't too productive, but he's only 4K. If he can play 28 to 30 minutes again, it's not a bad value play.
Yeah, one thing to note is Elfrid Payton only played 18 minutes. I know he only played 22 in the first game, but I kind of expected a few more minutes out of him, so I guess that could be something to monitor. But Alec Burks has just been playing really well. If the year ended today, Burks might have a shot at most improved player and sixth player of the year.
I think he's been running plenty of point for them too, which is why Payton hasn't been on the floor.
Yeah, so that's going to hurt Elf for sure. But yeah, I kind of agree. Like, the way I'm looking at it is if I am playing Giannis, I definitely want to pair him with a Nick, maybe two, because in tournaments, I should say, in a game where Giannis has a big game, it's obviously going to be because he plays 32, 35 minutes. Sure, he can play, you know, 26 minutes and have 60 fantasy points. Like, we've seen Giannis do that before, but in a game where he goes for 70, 75 fantasy points, it's probably because he's playing 32, 33, 34 minutes. And in that case, it's probably closer, and I would want probably Julius Randle or RJ Barrett there. It's kind of hard to really know who Obi Toppin being out really benefits. I think based on the way the minutes shook out, it's the main guy is Kevin Knox. He went up from 18 up to 28 after Obi Toppin got hurt. He's going to be out for, I think, a week, they said. So
yeah, 7 to 10 days.
Yeah, so I think Knox would – I think you're spot on with that. I think Knox would probably be the main value guy. I wouldn't mind playing Knox on his own. He kind of feels like a guy who –
he's
going to
score
11
fantasy points. I know it.
I feel like he also would be a guy that's kind of blowout-proof too, though. Like, are you really going to say, oh, got to sit down Kevin Knox? Probably not. So he'll probably be out there either way as long as he's not doing something that would bend or make him sit down. So Knox is probably the – I don't want to call him safe, but he's probably like the cheapest guy that I would look for in this game.
Yeah, I agree. How many minutes did... I mean, Reggie Bullock played 27 minutes. He wasn't wearing the right jersey, but he played 27 minutes. I mean, I guess he was wearing the right jersey, just the numbers were wrong. Reggie Bullock, like... So for me, I think I'd rather just play Reggie Bullock at 3,600 than Kevin Knox at 4K. But, like, if we don't have a ton of value open up at the slate, you can mix and match and play both of them in multiple lineups because they both should play at worst 27 minutes in this game. Other than that, though, yeah, like, I mean, Mitchell Robinson against, you know, Brooke Lopez hurts. The reason you play Mitchell Robinson is to block shots and get rebounds, and if he's away from the basket, definitely hurts his cause there, which is why playing centers against Milwaukee is often tough for me because Brooke Lopez is never around the rim. Anybody else from New York?
No, that pretty much does it for me.
All right, let's keep moving on. We got Golden State. Golden State might actually not only win a game, but be competitive. They're at Chicago here. Draymond Green has missed the first two games of the season. He practiced on Saturday. They're saying he could play on Sunday against the Bulls, so that will obviously be important. And then you obviously have James Wiseman, who's been pretty productive in two games. A lot of it's been in late blowout run, but he's looked the part. I mean, he's been really just, like, aggressive, too. He's not afraid to pull up from three or from deep two, and obviously he's been really good in terms of finishing lobs. Chicago last year, the reason I loved John Collins and on Wednesday night's slate, and that didn't work because he got into foul trouble, is they are really bad against the pick and roll. And I don't know what happened to Wendell Carter Jr. He's not looked good at all so far this year, and obviously he's had injuries. I don't think they have an answer for James Wiseman. He's priced up to 6,600 on DraftKings. I would feel better, you know, I'd feel more inclined to stomach that price tag if Draymond were out again. But Draymond's not a guy that, like, would just completely, like, I think Draymond could help him at times because I think I could see Draymond throwing him a ton of lobs in this game. So, like, it's not totally out the window if Draymond plays. It's a great matchup for Wiseman. It's a pretty good matchup for Curry, who's 9,300. We haven't had that ceiling game for Curry because he hasn't really played in the fourth quarter, but I mean, this could be the game for Curry at, you know, a lot. He could be way less popular than he normally would be.
Yep, I'm 100% with you. I think this is actually my favorite game of the slate just because this is two teams that I were very high on going into the year, and we just haven't seen them play in any competitive games. I guess Chicago kind of got close with Indiana on Saturday, but other than that, this really hasn't been a really exciting year so far for these two teams, so now we get to see them play in a closer game. The price on Steph Curry on FanDuel is 8,300, way too cheap. James Wiseman, 5K, way too cheap. On DraftKings, Zach LaVine was, I think he opened the year at like 7,800 or something like that. On Saturday night, he was 8,900. Now he's back down to 7,900. So he dropped $1,000 overnight, which is just really weird. And the spot is way better here against Golden State in a game that projects to be close or closer. So I love Zach LaVine on DraftKings. He is probably, obviously, it's more of a first look type thing, but probably my favorite play on DraftKings so far. And Kobe White's up
in
there
this
as well,
game or in general?
I think in general. Like,
yeah, I like it. Like, Golden State's playing fast this year again, and like I agree. I think this is perfectly set up for Zach LaVine.
Yeah, and then even though he's been shooting pretty poorly, like the usage has just been massive. He's been over 40% usage throughout the year. I think he's actually at 39. So he was at 42 in game two. He's at 38.5 on the year. So he has the highest usage of qualified players so far this season. Obviously, two game sample size, but still, like, I just really like Zach LaVine in the spot here in a game that should stay close. I mean, obviously things can happen, and the NBA always does. But in a game that obviously Vegas expects to stay close or should expect to stay close, I think Coby White, Zach LaVine, Lauri Markkanen didn't get a price drop, so I probably don't like him. But mainly those two guards are just guys that I like a lot. And then Wiseman at center over on FanDuel at just 5K, like it's kind of a little bit of an issue here if Draymond does return and the game does stay close, because a big reason why, I guess we don't know, we don't even know if it's a big reason, but we saw two blowouts and that kind of helped Wiseman. Like he played in the blowout. But the thing is, like, if Draymond comes back, we're going to see, Chris has already been ruled out. So he's been playing about 14 minutes, I believe. So we played 12 and then 14 minutes. So let's say Draymond just takes those minutes. And then I could easily see them just taking minutes away from Kevon Looney. Because why take Wiseman off the court now? Like, you let him start. Like, you let him see what he can do. He's been playing really well. So in my opinion, like, just keep him at that 24-minute mark. And I think you're good with that. And so if he stays around there in close games, I'm totally fine with it. Good spot. Like, we've attacked it the past 2 years. Big men against Chicago. So, I like Wiseman and Curry a ton on FanDuel. I think they're actually probably two of the better point-per-dollar plays. Haven't ran projections yet, but based on just, like, the eye test, I would say they're up there. Coby White, 6K on FanDuel. So, like, Zach LaVine, 7K on FanDuel. So these prices are just ridiculously cheap. So this is probably my favorite game and going to make for a lot of good plays, in my opinion.
Yeah, and I think Wiseman's really interesting in tournaments because – He played 25 minutes and he got he played the final 7.5 minutes of that Christmas Day blowout against Milwaukee. But he was off to a great start and then picked up a couple early fouls. So he played the first about 5 minutes of the first quarter, came out, and didn't come back in until the 7-minute mark of the second quarter. So if he doesn't get into foul trouble, you know, he might not even need the fourth quarter, you know, run to have a nice game. So I think in tournaments, if he can, I think he's really interesting regardless of Draymond's status. Yeah, this game's really stackable. Like, Curry, Wiseman I like, LaVine I like a lot in this game. Coby White is viable as well. The wings are the only question marks, right? I mean, Wiggins and Kelly Oubre have been awful. Did you see Josh Gross's tweet about Kelly Oubre? I think it's I'm going to pull it up. I'm pretty sure it said Kelly Oubre has not made a shot attempt this year that wasn't a dunk. Like, all of his field goal attempts that have not been dunks, he has not made one of them. Like, he's been just brutal. I'm going to find it. But, yeah, like, I think the wings are the question marks on both sides because Otto Porter hasn't been starting or playing big minutes. Patrick Williams has been solid, but his price has come up now. That's the only question mark I have from this game, really.
Yeah, he says, Oubre finished 1-for-10 today on Christmas, and the make was a dunk, so he's 0-for-20 from the field on field goal attempts that aren't dunks for two games. Man, that's tough. That is very tough. But, I mean, he's historically, like, a pretty good player. Like, I think eventually he's going to get it together, and he's a guy that can – say he doesn't go out and score a ton of points, he can still get there from the fantasy side of things, especially if it's a fast-paced game like we expect. Like, he's a guy that we like to target for blocks and steals and all that good stuff. So I don't mind going back to Uber. He's 6K on both sites. Obviously, it takes a little bit of a stomach to do that after a guy started the year 0-for-20 on shots that weren't dunks. But nonetheless, Kelly Uber is one of my favorite plays to use in DFS just because I think he's typically underpriced. But that's a crazy stat.
It's absurd. All right, three games left. Boston at Indiana. Pacers coming off second of back-to-back. But, you know, they handled Chicago pretty easily. So some of their starters played relatively high minutes. Like, Sabonis played 34 minutes. But a lot of that was to kind of help him get his stats, and he triple-doubled. His price is broken. I have no clue why he's only 8,400. He was 8,500 on Saturday night. Triple-doubled. He's 8,400. Boston's interior is the weak point of their defense. I know they added Tristan Thompson, but they were a bad post-up defense last year. We know Sabonis can post up. They also use him in the pick-and-roll a ton. He gets peripherals. Last year, he was top 7 in both touches per game and rebounding opportunities per game. And this year, he's once again top 5 in touches per game as a power forward. I played him both times he's been on a slate so far this year. I'm going to play him again, especially at this price tag. I just don't get it.
Yep, I think you pretty much summed it up perfectly there. I'm just going to play Sabonis until he's priced correctly. On FanDuel, they got it a little bit more right. He's 9-1. I think you could still play him over there, but he is more expensive than Zion. Like Zion, in my opinion, compared to Sabonis and Tatum and AD on FanDuel, it's just Zion at power forward for me because he's, you know, 1,000 cheaper than Tatum, 1,200 cheaper than Sabonis, almost 3K cheaper than AD, almost 4K cheaper than Giannis. So for me there on FanDuel, it's more clear cut Zion, which hurts my exposure for Sabonis. But yeah, on DraftKings 8-4, the price going down. Obviously, these prices came out before they knew he was going to put up a triple double. Right. But
regardless, yeah, though,
exactly. Like it's the same thing with LaVine. Like the price drops overnight when realistically it shouldn't have. So maybe, you know, maybe it's a Sunday, people are playing football, maybe they won't even catch these price drops. Maybe it's a great day to play DFS. So yeah, I like Sabonis a ton. Another guy, TJ Warren. Seemed like maybe he finally got his mojo back. He looked just absolutely brutal in their opener, and then he kind of had a somewhat bounce back game here. 23 points, 6 boards, 3 assists. Only played 26 minutes. Got a little bit of a blowout type game where they're up by like 30, I think, at one point. So
yeah, and with his foot thing, like he'll be one of the first guys they take out in a blowout. So that didn't help him.
Yeah, so I mean, maybe if you wanted to take a shot there, he on FanDuel. More so, he just is a little bit underpriced there. I think he's 5'6", so I don't mind taking a shot there. But on DraftKings, I don't really think it's necessary. But don't know if I find myself getting to Oladipo or Miles Turner. But Brogdon, you can always play Brogdon, in my opinion. Like, 7'3 price tag, he opened up the year at like 6'6 or something like that, which is just absurd. So now 7'3, a little bit more. But yeah, I still don't mind Brogdon there.
Yeah, I agree. I'm not really on Oladipo. Brogdon's just super safe. He fills up the stat sheet every single game, plays a ton of minutes. And Miles Turner, I just never play Miles Turner when he's around this price tag when Sabonis is active because his rebounding upside is not usually there. Like, he had 10 and 8 against on Wednesday against New York, but he also had 8 blocks. And Miles Turner is one of the best, you know, shot blockers in the league, but I don't want to hope for 6-7 blocks from him. At 6,100, it's just I just never get to him for Boston. So the opening game, I was a little bit surprised to see them start Thompson and Daniel Tice, and I thought, okay, maybe it has more to do with the fact that they were playing against Giannis and playing against Milwaukee. And I was like, okay, against Brooklyn, there's no way they start both of them against Durant, and they did. So is this just their starting five for the time being? Maybe until Kemba's back, are they just going to go Marcus Smart, Jaylen Brown, Tatum, Thompson, and Tice? I would expect that to happen again with Jeff Teague coming off the bench. Teague was also brutal on Christmas Day. He's up to he's still only 5,400 or 4,400, and his usage rate's still pretty high. He's pretty much running that second unit. Jaylen Brown, surprisingly, still leads the team with a 36% usage rate. Jason Tatum's right behind him at 34%. And then Jeff Teague's was relatively high prior to last game. It went down, but it's still around 25%. So what do we think of Boston in this spot?
Yeah, I mean, I think you can always play a guy like Jason Tatum. I think the 8-8 tag on DraftKings is fine. I wish Jaylen Brown were a bit cheaper. He's 7-5, so I can still play him over there on DraftKings. But on FanDuel, I think he's 8-5 now. Like, it's just one, or he's 8K, sorry. So it's just one of those things where, like, sometimes when a new year happens and injuries or trades occur where it affects somebody, the public just doesn't really catch on as quick. So Hayward's gone, Kemba's out, and nobody really thought about it because it's not like, oh, Kemba's out today. It's not like a daily announcement.
Yeah.
It was announced like, you know, a month back that he was going to miss a while. So maybe people didn't really catch. Nobody was playing Jaylen Brown in the first two games, and he absolutely torched.
I played Jaylen Brown on Christmas, but I also play Jaylen Brown so much because I think he's really good. Yeah. Dude, he's taken 24 and 25 shots in the first two games.
Yeah, the usage is going to, I would assume, continue to be up there with Kemba out and with Hayward gone. It's not like Thompson and Tice both starting helps both Tatum and Jaylen Brown because Smart's not going to shoot a lot. Yep. Tice isn't going to shoot a lot. Thompson's not going to shoot a lot. So it's basically just Brown and Tatum saying, hey, I'm going to shoot. No, you shoot. And then they just take turns chucking the ball. So I don't mind targeting either of those guys. Probably don't get to a ton of anybody else. I guess Tice isn't bad on FanDuel. He's center eligible now. So I guess I probably don't see myself getting
power forward eligible on DraftKings helps for sure.
Yeah, yeah. I guess I could.
They have to play decent minutes here because they're gonna have Turner and Sabonis on the other side. It's just they both Brown and Tatum have usage rates around north of 34%. Like they're both gonna take 20 shots every game. It's like I knew it as a guy that knows basketball and studies each slate and studies each team. Like I know that they don't have any – without Hayward and Kemba, they don't have any high-usage players. But then when you really look at it, like, who the hell else is going to shoot for this team? Like, Tristan Thompson's a guy that gets, like, three hook shots a game, and if he doesn't get them, he's going to hope for to get an offensive put back. Tice doesn't really get plays drawn for him. Marcus Smart will shoot threes a lot, but he's not a guy that you draw plays for, and yep. Their offense is just built for the – like, Teague's going to shoot off the bench, but they're not going to be on the floor with Teague as much as they would if he was starting. It's just – it's weird. It's weird that this team just, without Kemba right now, they just don't have a lot of options, but they're lucky that Tatum and Jaylen Brown are both really good to keep them in games.
Yep, for sure, and I think you continue to, even at the higher price tags, I think you continue to play these guys, because even though it's Jaylen Brown, who I think could potentially be a superstar, like when you look at his underlying numbers, like the usage rate and all that stuff and how many shots he's taking per game, like those are superstar type volume, so I think you can play him at this kind of price tag.
Yeah, I agree. I love Jaylen Brown. Two games left. Phoenix at Sacramento. Both these teams, I believe, coming off the second end, front end of a back-to-back, I should say. What do you think of this game? Got two relatively fast-paced teams, and the Suns have obviously been really interesting so far this year with their new squad.
Yeah, these teams are actually playing each other right now, and Chris Paul is having a pretty solid game. 24 minutes in, the fourth quarter is just starting. He's got 14, 4, and 11. He was one of my favorite point guards of the day today on FanDuel. And again, don't mind targeting him here. He's 7-2 on DraftKings. On FanDuel, he's 6-8. So it's another spot where his price went down. And 6-8, just way too cheap for a guy that Chris Paul was going to get the minutes. It's a pretty good spot. I guess we could potentially see him sit here because he's a little bit older, but there hasn't been any kind of talk on him sitting back-to-backs or anything like that. Devin Booker 7-5 on FanDuel. Like, if we were to see somehow Chris Paul sit, obviously I think Devin Booker would be probably the lock of FanDuel at 7-5 in a spot against Sacramento. So yeah, Booker and CP3 are easily my favorites in this game, or on this team I should say, maybe in this game. But yeah, I just think they're probably too cheap. Don't mind Ayton either at 7-4 on FanDuel. On DraftKings, he's 7-4 as well, so I guess you could consider him there. But Booker's 9-5 on DraftKings. I don't think many people will be on him because, you know, he's priced up near guys like Giannis and all that stuff, so probably unlikely that he's going to get much ownership. So if you want to play him because of that, never mind playing Devin Booker at low ownership, like he's a guy that can go out and score 40 real points any given night. But I much prefer him on FanDuel.
Yeah, I'm pretty much, like, okay with anybody on, like, I'm fine with Chris Paul at 7-2 if he's in there. Booker is a little bit harder to get excited about just because he's losing ball handling duties, and he's priced at his ceiling, I think, at 9,500 on DraftKings. So, like, can he hit his ceiling? Yeah. Absolutely. He has as high of a ceiling as almost anybody in basketball, but and I like Ayton here as well at 7,400. Like, the pick and roll is going to be a lot more evident in this offense with Chris Paul. For Sacramento, I mean, Buddy Hield without Bogdanovich is playing huge minutes. He played 41 minutes in the last game. I believe went to overtime. But still, he last year you had to worry about playing. If you played Buddy Hield, you had to worry about him getting off to a hot start. And if he didn't and Bogdanovich played well, Bogdanovich was going to play the minutes and Buddy Hield would be around like 24, whereas Bogdanovich would be like 32 or 33. You don't really have that concern anymore. He's 6,900. He has a massive ceiling as well. De'Aaron Fox is 8,100. I feel like he's just kind of always perfectly in play when he's at this price range. What about Marvin Bagley, though? Like, I love playing him when he's healthy because he's such a high-usage player. He played 27 minutes before fouling out last game. They talked about, like, Luke Walton talked about just using him early and often in this offense, despite him being, you know, having issues with injuries. And with Phoenix right now, like, they don't have a power forward that can really defend Marvin Bagley. So I think he's kind of interesting here.
Yeah, I mean, we're seeing him have a pretty decent game right now. He's played 18 minutes through three quarters, 11 points, 10 boards. And that's kind of what you are kind of hoping for out of Bagley is, you know, double-double type numbers. And the real big thing that's going to hold him back is the minutes. He's going to kind of – they're kind of going to limit him because of the injury history and all that stuff. But, you know, he played 27 in the opener. He's probably going to play around 25 in this one. Maybe potentially a guy to monitor on a back-to-back, but
yeah, that's definitely true.
Yeah, but I mean, if we're going to project him for 25, 26, 27 minutes, I never mind playing Bagley because he's always going to be lower owned because nobody wants to play him because the minutes aren't secure, and or I guess they're not massive. and he's just such a good permanent player. He's 5'7" on DraftKings, 5'8" on FanDuel. So I don't mind him either way on either site. I don't know if he'd necessarily be a priority because I'm sure there'll be guys with better minute projections and better ceilings because of those minutes. But yeah, at low ownership, never mind taking a shot on Bagley. The guy that I like the most, especially on FanDuel, is Buddy Hield, 5,800. Like, that's just, again, just way too cheap. I think what FanDuel did was they just took everyone's price and they moved it either up or down $100 or $200. Yeah. I think he was 5'6" on the Saturday slate, so 5'8" now. So that kind of fits the mold of that. He's played 26 minutes, so he's gonna be a guy that's gonna play a ton of minutes. You just gotta hope that you get the points out of him. He only has 10 points and 2 rebounds, so that's not ideal. But again, the minutes are always gonna be there for the guy like Buddy Hield, unless he, you know, gets a bench that runs his mouth to the coach or something like that. Luke Walton gets mad and sits him down. But yeah, for me, Buddy Hield, I think is fine at 5'8" on FanDuel. I think he's 6'9" on DraftKings, so I don't really love that over there. But yeah, on FanDuel, I think he's just probably a little bit too underpriced considering what kind of minutes he can play.
Any interest in, I mean, like, I can't pay 5,800 for Harrison Barnes because I'll be the first person to play Harrison Barnes at like 4,800 or whatever because he's going to play 38 minutes and hopefully do stuff. But at almost 6K, I just don't think there's a ceiling. But like, you have this front court with Hassan Whiteside at 3,700. Rashawn Holmes is starting, but he's not playing huge minutes. I don't know what his minutes are at right now, but like they're obviously playing Whiteside 15 minutes or so each night. Bagley's getting time at center. Bielitz is playing at power forward and center at times. So it's just a lot of guys right now. Which is why Bagley for me, like I just prefer him because he's playing power forward and center, whereas Whiteside's not going to play any four. He's 3,700, and we know how efficient. Like he can double double in 14 minutes. Is how Whiteside can. Any interest in him at 3,700, or is it more of a if there's really no value on a slate, I'll take a shot on him.
Yeah, that's exactly.
So hard to get up a center spot too.
Yeah. The opportunity cost is definitely there. Typically. Like on a slate where there's not really a ton of good center options, which I don't see this slate being that. Like we have Zion, Vooch, Sabonis, Drummond, Towns, Embiid, AD, Giannis. I think you can definitely find yourself getting caught in the weeds if you play a guy there and he doesn't perform because there's so much opportunity cost at the position. And the Kings are kind of like opposite of what the Pelicans are now. Like they're running a fairly deep rotation. They're playing like their main three guys, like Barnes, Fox, Hield. Those guys, their minutes are pretty secure, but then with how many centers they have, like they're playing Bielitz, Holmes, Bagley, Whiteside, all at center. Mm-hmm. And Harrison, but they're just mixing in a lot of those secondary guys a lot. So like Fox and Hield are probably the two guys I feel most comfortable playing. But if you really find yourself in a pinch, I guess I wouldn't mind Whiteside in terms of the value. I don't think we've really named a guy that's that cheap yet that we really like a ton. Like
at center.
So, at any position, really. Like, we've talked about...
Yeah, I mean, Bismack stands out. Knox is fine. I don't mind Reggie Bullock. But, yeah, it's not...
Yeah, like I would much rather play Bismack than Whiteside. But, I mean, if you want to be contrarian, Whiteside, in the preseason, that one game he played 14 minutes and put up, like, 37 DK points. So he can do it in a short time.
Yeah, if Bagley sits if Bagley sits, it obviously changes some things around. You could probably... talk yourself into Rashawn Holmes at 4,500, and you could definitely talk yourself into Whiteside at 3,700 if he can get to 20 minutes. But like, there's also a path to play Whiteside and Bagley. Bagley is a guy that will foul, so like if he fouls out or picks up early foul trouble, that'll definitely help Whiteside too. All right, let's go to this last game, Minnesota at the Lakers. Like 5-10 minutes ago, Fantasy Labs tweeted that Cat was going to the locker room with a wrist injury. He did come back, and I believe he's back in the game. So. That helps us for this sake. I mean, Anthony Davis is questionable. He's going to play. I mean, I think we'd all be stunned if he didn't play. The question is, will he stay in the game? He was outstanding against Dallas. The Lakers as a whole were outstanding. I mean, they got contributions from everyone. I mean, Montrezl Harrell really destroyed them in that game. Schroeder had another nice game. Kyle Kuzma had a solid game. Like, this is just showing how deep they are. The prices for these Lakers, like LeBron's 10K flat on DraftKings. Anthony Davis is underpriced at 10-2, in my opinion. And then, like, I think Schroeder is underpriced at 6,100. And Trez is fairly priced at 6,100 as well. Like, Trez isn't playing Clippers minutes anymore. He's playing starters minutes despite coming off the bench. He's played over 30 minutes in both games, I believe. Like, he is legitimately playing starters minutes. And with how efficient he is, like... it's massive.
Yep, I'm right there with you. I prefer AD over LeBron. I usually do, especially on FanDuel, just because he's gonna kind of fill up the sheet a little bit more. And obviously, he's a guy who, if you were like, "Hey, Anthony Davis had 10 blocks and steals today," like, would you be all that surprised? And obviously, if he gets 10, it's a huge day. But that's makes for 30 fantasy points over on FanDuel. So, on FanDuel, I definitely prefer AD over LeBron. He's also cheaper over there. So. But I think you nailed the secondary pieces as well. Like Harrell, the price is up a bit more, but like he's just a guy who he's always been productive, permanent guy, and now his minutes are not only up, but much more secure than they were on the other side of Los Angeles with the Clippers, because you know he's going to keep coming off the bench, but they're going to get him the minutes. They're not going to force him out of the lineup like the Clippers were doing at times.
And
And
Gasol's not closing game. Like he didn't. Marc Gasol
right.
didn't close the open. He didn't step on the floor in the fourth quarter of the opening game. Trez played the entire fourth quarter last game, which some of that might have had to do with the blowout. But he was also like, I feel like he earned those minutes because he was. You could make the case he was the best player on the floor for them in that game. He was just. They couldn't stop him. Like these prices for Lakers are all really, really nice. Like I have no problem with any of them except for really Kyle Kuzma, who yeah, he had a nice game, but I just don't play Kyle Kuzma.
Yeah. I mean, it's not like it's a tough matchup either. Like, obviously, we're kind of working off of last year's stats and all that stuff in terms of defense. But I mean, I don't really see a reason to expect Minnesota to get better at defense. So, yeah, I think it's a good spot for him again. Shooting guard is typically a spot that there's not a lot of studs on the slate over on FanDuel. We could potentially have like guys like Beal and Booker who could be strong plays, and Zach LaVine. But if you want to save some money in that slot, that second slot, Schroeder fits the bill at 6K. I think he's 6'1" on DraftKings. So, yeah, I don't really mind any four of those guys. Don't know if I see myself getting to a ton of LeBron. Like they've mentioned that they're gonna play him in like they didn't say short bursts, but they were gonna play him in monitored bursts or something like that. That's what Vogel said in the first month of the year because the short layoff and all the time that he played in the bubble and the playoffs and all that stuff. So, I mean, it's not something that I want to like think about a ton, but it's kind of hard to not when like he's going to be so expensive, and it was obviously a factor in the first game when he only played 28 minutes. So yeah, I'm definitely team AD over LeBron.
What about Minnesota? Second end of a back-to-back for them. I think their game just finished, actually. I mean, Cat's 9,600, pretty nice price tag for him. I'm trying to find their starting lineup tonight because I know in the first game they started Beasley, Okogie, Rubio, Towns, and Layman. No, that can't be right. Was that their starting five?
Let me check.
There's no way that's right. That's what Popcorn Machine has, unless I'm
No.
looking at the wrong colors.
Sorry, can you read it off again? What'd you say?
Beasley, Okogie, Rubio, Towns, and Layman.
So that was their initial starting rotation, and then like a minute before the game, they switched Russell for Rubio. So it was Russell,
Okay.
Layman, Okogie, Beasley, Towns.
Still kind of interesting.
Yeah.
Thoughts on, I mean, the Lakers' defense is very good. We know that Towns is also kind of matchup proof. We'll see. I'm interested to see. I don't know how popular Towns is going to be on this slate, which is definitely intriguing. I know you do the ownership stuff for us at FTN, but the problem I have is like it's been tough for me to kind of gauge Russell and Rubio and Anthony Edwards.
Yeah, for sure. I do think Towns will kind of get lost in the shuffle with Giannis, Davis, Embiid, Drummond, Sabonis, Vooch, Zion. Like all those guys are center eligible over on DraftKings. So I do think he will probably get lost in the shuffle, especially when he's 200 less than Embiid. So I think people would probably prefer Embiid in that spot against Cleveland, and then even AD at 600 more. But yeah, I think the big thing is deciding kind of what we want to do with these secondary guys. Like I think you can always play Cat, even though the matchup is tough. I actually think that the Lakers defense won't be as good as they were last year. I know they were, I think, the number one or number two team in terms of defensive efficiency. But losing Howard and McGee, that should probably hurt their defense a bit. And then they get Gasol and Harrell, so I think they're probably gonna take a step back. I still think they'll be a good defensive team, but maybe they take a step back. Maybe they play a little bit quicker. Who knows? But yeah, Beasley's a guy that's just gonna play massive amounts of minutes. He played 39 minutes on Saturday, so maybe that means he doesn't play as many minutes on Sunday. But we kind of expected that coming into the year, that Beasley was going to be kind of the guy who, outside of Russell and Rubio, like his minutes were going to be pretty secure. And guys like Okogie, Culver, Edwards, Layman, they would kind of shuffle around. I actually thought Rubio and Russell would start together, but doesn't look like that's the case. For whatever reason, they don't want to do that. But I don't really have a ton of interest in any of the wings or guards or anything. It's pretty much just cat or bust. Never mind playing D'Lo, going back to L.A. where he'll probably take his phone and record some more things. But
Russell was late to shoot around. I didn't realize that. That's why their lineup changed that first game.
Their first announcement, a beat writer first announced that Rubio was going to start again and Russell was going to come off the bench again. Mm. So the first game was a punishment type thing, but then the second game they thought they were just mixing it up or actually going with Russell. But then they, with like 2 minutes before the game started, they flipped it back or the report at least switched. So, yeah, I guess I never mind playing Russell. 7-6 isn't a bad price by any means. On FanDuel, where he's a shooting guard, I think it could potentially be tough to get to him because he's right in the middle of LaVine and Devin Booker. Could mean lower ownership, but just off the nose, I would assume Booker and LaVine would be guys that I like more.
Yeah, I agree for sure. You can't play Anthony Edwards right now, but like I believe Malik Beasley might get suspended at some point soon.
Yeah, so the suspension, like I read that if he has to serve any time or anything like that, it'll be next year in 2021 after the season. So I guess not that that's good because I think anybody that does anything like that should probably have to, you know, have justice served. But I guess the NBA could hand down a suspension.
Yeah, if that happens, then Anthony Edwards becomes a lot more trustworthy. Okoji is 4,100. He just has no usage. So there's probably other go for the New York guys that we talked about. I think they're better options. Yeah. All right, Kyle, appreciate it, man. That was fun. It's weird. It's so weird for me doing an NBA podcast on a Saturday night during the NFL season, but I'm at the point where I'm still doing football content. I'm still loving football, but like after some season-long stuff, like I'm just so tilted at fantasy right now. Because, especially, dude, I have a third-place team that is on pace for 195 points right now because I have Kamara and Gronk and just a bunch of studs, and it's like it doesn't even matter. So it feels kind of good and also weird to be talking and preparing for an NBA slate on a Sunday, but I'm pumped, man. I'm gonna have the game by game article Sunday afternoon plus the 5 stats to know. Content wise, what do you got for us on Sunday?
I think just ownership and projections. I'll try to get those out as soon as I can. Might be a little bit delayed with the NFL day, but it'll be a cool day to be able to watch football while running all that stuff and updating that. So yeah, just check out for those probably around 4 or 5, and I think that's it. And my article will be back on Monday for the NBA season.
Awesome, appreciate it, Kyle. I'm sure Kyle will be on multiple times this year, so this won't be the last you've heard of him. Joe and I'll be back on Monday to break down that slate. And best of luck on Sunday, football, basketball, whatever you're playing. Enjoy. Make sure you're checking out FTN's awesome content, daily fantasy betting. I mean, we are crushing it over there, and it's been a hell of a start. I mean, it's so crazy to think we're still in the beginning phases, but you guys have had great support, and it's been helping us out a ton. So have a great rest of your weekend. Best of luck on Sunday. Joe and I will be back on Monday. Till then, peace out.
Thank you for tuning in to today's episode of the FTN NBA Podcast with Adam and Joe. Please subscribe, rate, and review the podcast.